This is the podcast for August 26, 2011. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from deep inside the Rick Perry Bibliography of Doom. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
His Bibliography of Doom, because, you know, he's...
Yes.
He has all of his books. There's another one. He wrote a book about the Boy Scouts.
Huh?
In which he likened the gay to alcoholism.
Uh-huh.
Just because you're addicted to alcohol doesn't mean you have to take a drink.
Uh-huh. Rick Perry's,
I am not making that up.
And his earlier work, Slavery, Good for the Markets. Yeah. Yeah. And he's their number one guy.
He's their number one guy. And, you know, it's making John Kyle look better by the minute.
No, I know.
Not meant to be a factual statement. This is not meant to be my current position. The book I published 9 months ago.
Yes. This autographed copy of the book I just published. Not intended to represent my actual views on anything.
On Social Security being a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to get the vapors.
How big of a meat stick do you have to be?
I don't know.
Guy's camp. Yeah, that's the one I want. I want him.
Yeah, well, and did he have any political ambition to be president of the United States when he wrote and published the words Social Security is a Ponzi scheme? I mean...
One would assume not.
9 months ago, you know.
I think at that time his ambition was to secede and become, you know, king of all Texas.
Yeah, so, yeah, and... Yeah. And that was working out real well for him, and then, yeah.
He prayed for rain, and now he's going to get a hurricane, so good for him.
Or an earthquake.
Or an earthquake, yeah.
And by the way, Susie Madrick wins the internet this week.
Yes. I have told that joke a few times.
Have you? She wrote, there was a 5.9 earthquake in Washington, D.C. Obama wanted it to be 3.4, but the Republicans wanted 5.9, so he compromised. Thank you, Susie.
Thank you, Susie. Well done.
Well done.
Reality is very quickly turning into a very bad cartoon.
Well, and The Onion, I don't know if you saw The Onion today.
Just quit? Just found out of business?
No, they didn't just quit and go out of business. They could have. Their title was White Hot GOP Race Down to Two Mentally Ill People and Person Who Lost Nomination Last Time. Mitt and Perry look like... separated at birth, old married couple. I mean, even the lines on their faces are the same. It's scary. Their skin tone is the same. The same gay stylist used the same spray on tan can on them.
They're the result of a brutal Darwinian political process that says you have to look like this to be president, period, on the right. We don't like people who are less than, you know, attractive on the left necessarily when it comes to politics. But... you have to look this good. You have to be this handsome if you want to ride this ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, their Indian tribal names are he who parts hair on left and he who parts hair on right. That's the difference. That is the distinction, physical distinction between the two of them is that and only that.
They have the same eyebrows. It's really scary. It's just odd.
And they get that DNA from George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Reagan had to, you know, stamp his hair on with a vinyl melting machine with a heat gun. But it's the same template. Romney has learned not to wear a tie.
Yep.
And Perry has learned not to shoot people
and
during
somebody
the rally.
Somebody took away his ascot as well. Yeah. So he wears his ascot on the inside. Everyone, I know there was an earthquake in Washington, D.C. area and felt all the way to Philadelphia and so forth. And we certainly are thinking about everyone who's been affected by that.
Which is nobody.
No, but. That's not true. Because down the road, they shut down permanently, I guess, the Washington Monument because there's big cracks in it.
Yeah.
And the Washington Cathedral, anyone there can't go to work. I know that a lot of people are concerned that when the weather changes, all of a sudden these buildings start to show lots of cracks.
Sure.
That didn't have them. So, you know.
But this was full employment day for the Media B team.
Yeah, it was. Well, everyone's on vacation except for us, Driftglass. And we were married, what, 5 days ago? Six days ago?
Yes. Well, we were married on Friday.
Friday. And you're back to work as of Monday, and I'm getting not three but four kids to school because we're carpooling. So there's,
I signed on for three. I don't know where this.
No, this fourth one is showing up and eating waffles and having a good time and going off to school with us. So, and that's working. And I didn't tell you this, but there might be a fifth and sixth. I'm not kidding, but we'll talk about that later. Another mom is looking for, you know, it appears as what's happening is these women workers who's, you know, either don't have husbands or have husbands working out of town are being expected to go to work at 7:30 in the morning or 7 or, you know, 6 or whatever. And, you know,
too bad
if you're a single mom. Too bad if you're, you know, you have
kids. As I recall, the first because my mom worked.
Yeah.
The first words my mom spoke to our neighbors in the suburbs where we moved, which were a little off-putting and had to be explained because the family next door to ours grew to be very dear friends of ours, but it's a black family. The first thing she asked was, do you work?
Oh, wow.
And I think there was some raised eyebrows.
Like, about, what do you mean by that, white woman? Yes, right.
Exactly. But it was, no. I have to, she's a school teacher. Mm-hmm. So it was, I have to have someone look after my kids, and neighbors in her tradition can always be trusted.
Yeah.
I just want to know if I can leave my kids with you or we can make some arrangement or whatever. Oh.
Now you're a nice lady next door.
Oh,
yeah.
Doesn't matter. Oh, you're just looking for, yeah. So, but yeah, this is, you know, the plight of, you know, what do you do? This, you need a village. It takes a village thing. It's really true.
It really is. It really is.
And, you know, I spent many a lunch hour and preschool and post-school, you know, having peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at a variety of people's houses.
Mm-hmm.
And just because that's the way it works.
The way it works. And one more kid is not work when you've already got three. Believe me, it's just not.
You know, suddenly it's a team sport. So.
It is. And we want to thank everyone that wrote nice things to us about our wedding. It was a lovely wedding. I had a good time. I have three memories of the wedding that I share with everybody.
Okay.
Number one is you yelling, I do, during the ceremony. I do!
That's right. What do you think? That really clear, Your Honor.
Yeah. Judge was really nice, by the way.
Judge was, yeah.
And the second memory I have is coming back and you and your brother making sandwiches in the kitchen. And me sitting down to at the dining room table and realizing I'd made no preparations for dishes or silverware or anything at all. I just, you know, we had clean plates, but there was no matching or, you know, nothing looked good. And I sort of got this panicked look on my face. I must have, because I just went, I didn't plan this very well. And, I mean, my computer was still on the dining room table and we're all sitting down to eat. It was just kind of a mess. And your mother looked over at me and said, well, now you're family. Oh, all right. So we got out the kids' plastic plates and we had a meal. It was fine.
Yeah. And the kids made the cake.
The kids made the cake. There's a picture of the cake on my blog. If you Google Blue Gal, you can go look at the beautiful heart that my middle child frosted on the cake. It was lovely, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And the third memory is us, some people from my church very kindly gifted us a night in a local B&B, which was lovely. And we would not have had a wedding night away from the kids if that had not been a gift to us. So it was just a very generous thing to do. And we checked in, and there was some confusion about the reservation, and she had to look at her computer and so on and so forth. And while we're waiting, we're sitting there talking about different things and laughing. And she came out, and she said, something to the effect of, you two seem to have so much fun together.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
And that was just a real nice confirmation.
We fake that for strangers.
We fake that when we check into a motel.
Yeah. That was nice. That was really nice.
It was really nice confirmation that, yes, we do. We have a good time together. So in the traditional wedding practice of reading telegrams from far away, we have some people that wrote into us that I want to share a couple of people said. Our friend Kevin on Facebook wrote, I don't know why the media keeps referring to you as Kim Kardashian. But damn, your wedding got a lot of attention.
Well, it worked.
It worked. You know, it was that was the decoy wedding for the paparazzi, so they wouldn't come to us. And our listener Judy wrote, your pre-wedding podcast, I'll call it the White Album, knocked it out of the park for me. I hope you two have a wonderful life together, and may your first child be a masculine child.
I refer to it as the Off-White Album.
The Off-White Album.
That's fine. That's fine.
And finally, Lisa wrote and said, my husband and I have bonded over your podcast, too, and it's been the springboard for some great road trip conversations. Your podcast enriches our lives, and we wish you a happy marriage. And then Lisa's husband also wrote to confirm, yes, we listened to your podcast on the road. So that was just really touching, and we're so glad to hear from you and have your good wishes and support. Thank you so much. One of the things I think people talk about when about marriage is that couples look out for one another.
You have each other's back.
So. We have each other's back, so to speak. And one of the ways I would like to request that you have my back and I have yours is that we tell each other and remind each other not to watch Morning Joe.
Yeah. Because
we both made that mistake, and it's
bad.
And I'm wondering, I want to ask you whether you think Morning Joe is designed to piss off liberal bloggers in particular. Because who else is watching that show? I mean,
I thought Lockup was supposed to do that.
Oh. Come on. Except I love it now that Rachel brings that up. Like, yes. Come on, guys. It's Friday. It's time for prison. Hide the kids. It's time for prison.
It's such a jarring. I don't know what their business plan is. I really don't. It's pretty clear from my rudimentary analysis, but I think intelligent analysis of local media, national media, and large blogs that every one of them has a business plan.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. They
wow.
Do.
Okay.
I mean, progressive radio has a business plan. Hmm. Weekends in Chicago, I don't say it's a good one. I'm saying that they have a plan for raising revenue.
Okay.
And so not to wander too
maybe
far
that's
afield.
But, maybe that's what we need.
Yeah, I think we do.
Okay. I don't know how do we get there, but that's interesting.
But it's I mean, they're media, and so they make their money off of advertising and off of sponsorships. Progressive talk radio in Chicago on, for example, Sunday is awful.
Yeah.
It's awful. I mean, it's awful in exactly the same way. It's a bunch of centrist, you know, both sides now, Mark Green claptrap, followed by reruns of Meet the Press.
Right.
So, you know, they have time to fill, and they have to fill it with something. I think Morning Joe is a sop to and a bunch of other things they do throughout the day that I have a real hard time reconciling with MSNBC being this liberal bastion. You know, there are basically two and a half people, I think it would be fair to say, two and a half programs, not people, programs on MSNBC I find tolerable and liberal in a sense of is they're intelligent, they're engaging, they're interactive.
So that would be Lawrence and Rachel.
Yeah. And occasionally the Chris Matthews Show doesn't make me want to throw up.
Yeah.
Because he's a process guy. He's, you know, he's much more interested in the mechanics of politics as opposed to the morality of it. And the other stuff is just unwatchable.
Well, and I think it was Batocchio who pointed out that he's a Reagan Democrat.
Yeah, he is.
So,
he loves
Reagan.
So,
that makes him a different ball of wax altogether. Yeah.
And, you know, I will not speak of the other people on in the evenings because they do their thing and they do the thing well. It's just not my cup of tea. But there's 3 hours in the morning when this, you know, Reagan Republican former congressman has on a bunch of really awful beltway wankers to jerk off to.
Well, and you called them frat boys. You called them frat boys on an earlier show. And you know.
And you know, you have it's Mark Halperin's heaven. It's awful. It's really just unremittingly awful. And there's this thing where, you know, you get reminded if you watch the Rachel Maddow show that she says, you know, here's Michael Steele, who's an MSNBC contributor. Mm-hmm. They have a bunch of people on payroll.
Yeah. Well, and they have Pat Buchanan on payroll, and he always has a seat at Morning Joe if he wants it. I mean.
Well, and they got to put him somewhere.
Yeah.
So they stuff all of these jerk-offs under one roof and give them a microphone and let them, you know, jabber on for 3 hours about inane claptrap that is just unlistenable. So
what was going on? Yeah, what was going on this morning?
Well, this morning it was, you know, I barely remember it other than I just, it was,
you said it was Howard Dean. It was Howard Dean and Harold Ford Jr.
Howard Dean was trying to make be reasonable and make some sense about something. And they swarmed him like white blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just ganged him. And Harold Ford Jr. was being the same Wall Street taint-licking whore that he always is. You know, he is such a transparently douchey Wall Street water boy, mm-hmm. that, you know, every time he's on the air, his job, I mean, as far as I can tell, his job, which he's, I'm sure, paid very well for, is to go on TV and say Barack Obama is wrong. I'm a former Democrat. You know, I'm a Democrat. I had the DLC. So, you know, and he goes around the table and says, my close personal friend Pat Buchanan and I agree about everything. My close personal friend so-and-so agree. He's close personal friends with everybody. Mm-hmm. He's a glad-handing sack of shit. And then proceed to explain why Wall Street is right, Wall Street is Main Street, and we shouldn't say bad things about business.
Well, I was going to say, Wall Street is faultless.
Right. And taxes always need to be cut.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's absolutely reliable in the Wall Street apologist bullshit that he delivers every single fucking time he opens his mouth. So there's no accident to it. Every time he's on Meet the Press, every time he's on Morning Joe, he says exactly the same centrist Wall Street Democratic Leadership Committee bullshit. That's what he's paid to do. And there's no other voice on it. There's Mark Halperin giving his horribly inaccurate, you know, prescriptions about how the Republican Party is doing great and how the Democrats are awful and how everything is good for John McCain.
But I wonder if the audience for that show isn't both, let's piss off liberal bloggers because that gets us on the blogs.
Could be.
And number two, Wall Street is waiting for the market to open. And so they watch Morning Joe. And so, of course, they want to have their taint licked, as you put so gracefully put it.
Thank you. I would have said laved, but that might have, you know. That's too elitist. I'm swilling good scotch.
Stop sugarcoating it, honey.
Yeah. Or and the rest of the people in D.C.,
yeah, well, the staffers.
All those interns and clowns who aspire to be Mark Halperin.
Yeah.
You know, and speaking of which, we'll talk later about the bench.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about that next, actually.
Yeah, okay.
The fact that something you brought up earlier today, that the conservative movement seems to be planning very carefully mm-hmm. for the next step, which is to bring in young talent that has no taint of George W. Bush. And there's that word again.
I know.
And
this is the taint episode, people.
And allow them to say, you know, well, you know, George W. Bush wasn't my cup of tea. It was really before my time. However, now that we're moving forward mm-hmm. and not looking to the past and not blaming anyone and really knowing that both sides are equally strident, mm-hmm. and we really need to get back to governing, and that means tax cuts and less regulation and less government in people's lives, and we're off to the races.
Right.
And you had an example of this. Where? Where was the example of this?
Well, I wouldn't say the conservative movement. I'd say the expatriate conservative movement.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because the teabaggers are just, you know, they're nuts.
Right.
I'm sure they have some advanced planning, and you can see young people going to the camera. But you have sort of the children of Bill Buckley.
Yeah.
Who, you know, Bill Buckley brought a bunch of young talent from various schools, Harvard and so forth.
Including David Brooks. Yep.
And he swept them up into his circle, and he taught them how to be conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And they all emulated him. And a lot of his second and third generation clones
mm-hmm.
appear to me to be doing the same thing.
Okay. All right.
The two locuses, well, three locuses really, are the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
Which has Ross Douthat on it, or Douthat on it, who, as far as I can tell, emerged directly from his mother's womb and went to write columns in the New York Times.
The last time I saw him on television was on the Bill Maher show, where he actually said the words, but the Democrats.
He is the youngest New York Times columnist ever, mm-hmm. and he was put on there after Bill Kristol was fired.
Wow.
That is the reasonable conservative junior senator seat on the mm-hmm. New York Times. It gets filled by whoever it is. And, you know, it's David Brooks and Ross. And Ross is just a terrible writer. He's a terrible writer. And, of course, these people are all called, you know, the leading lights and the big thinkers and the new intellectuals, et cetera, et cetera. But that's only by virtue of the fact that they're given these really sweet assignments in the media. If you actually read what they say, they're just awful. They're just as flat and as narcissistic and apologist and college frat-ish, you know?
And almost to a person, there will be an example of poor research every week, too.
Yeah. Or just some, like, wild, over-the-top bias that isn't intellectually supportable by anything that they've said before.
Yep.
Megan McArdle is another one of these people who's just an awful writer and a terrible economist and who has a job forever at The Atlantic. One of her colleagues, Connor Friedersdorfer, or whatever the hell his name is – refers to her as, you know, a bright, one of the bright lights of writing and intellectual thinking. He is a 20-something somebody who was created out of whole cloth by Andrew Sullivan.
Andrew Sullivan.
Who's just manufactured by him. And he's an absolute lightweight, strident Andrew Sullivan, third generation, faded photocopy. And on and on and on. The New York Times is one nexus for this. And mind you, I'm not bitching about them specifically. They're god-awful writers, and they're not very good at what they do. But it is so clear that what is happening, this group of people is creating that next generation of people who will then rise up and be the people you will see on the Sunday morning talk shows or whatever replaces them. See on, you know, on Skype TV or wherever the people gather. Wherever it is people point to that the organization or the institution or the media center that is setting the agenda, these people are being created for that purpose. And the other one is the From Forum, who puts on – the example I'm going to give you now is directly from that one. And it's
– I think I really have to get you an I'm a From Forum.
You really do.
A coffee mug at least.
Just so you know, David Frum is a former Bush speechwriter who, you know, got kicked off the gravy train at the American Enterprise Institute and suddenly discovered that, you know, conservatism is flawed. But he really feels that it's his job to save it because liberals are, you know, evil, strident, nasty people who can't be trusted. Again, across the board, every one of these people exists to replicate the same lie. They cannot admit liberals were right. They can't do it. It would end their professional and intellectual careers.
Didn't David Frum ask some sort of Cavuto style question of what if we're wrong?
A
couple of weeks ago.
He did.
And then he comes right back and what happened?
He sticks a little toe in that every now and then runs away. And then two columns later, it's, you know, the equivocation is back. But it's all built on the same mythology. It's all built on the mythology that conservatism was just fine until around 2006. And George Bush personally took it down, you know, took conservatism down to the basement of the White House and shot it in the head. And he is to blame. There's nothing wrong with conservatism per se. George Bush is a perversion of an essentially noble movement that was going just fine, which ignores everything that happened between 1964 and 2006. These people are the intellectual heavyweights of this movement. Yeah. And you can see it in their comments. You can see it in their posts. You can see it in their assertions. And it's like, okay, what about the Clinton impeachment? Where does that fit in your cosmology?
Yeah.
What about the Atwater? Where does that fit? What about George H.W. Bush requiring Lee Atwater to win him a president? What about Reagan using really racist language and ads to win the Southern? What about the Southern strategy? What about Reagan inviting Jerry Falwell into the party? What about everything that was said by Paul Weyrich in 1980 about now we're going to take over the party?
Yeah.
All the things that you're bitching about, all the things you explain away as George Bush, this anomaly. George Bush was the apotheosis of your movement.
And everybody on the left saw that.
Yes, saw it coming.
It wasn't a shock. to any of us.
And so now that these people, the intellectual, mind you, that's the important part, the intellectual bulwark of their stupid lying movement lies in ruins around them. You know, it's burning in the
And this is what's so infuriating to the intellectual side of the liberal movement is that there's no intellect there, you know?
No. And this is why people like David Frum and Andrew Sullivan and David Brooks absolutely will not debate this specific topic in public, ever. Because all you have to do is say, well, wait a minute. I'll sit here quietly while you explain away the Iran-Contra. Explain that to me. Explain the Reagan deficits in the light of the great Reagan fantasy about fiscal conservatism. Explain Pat Buchanan. And I've got a list of about 200 of these you know, venial and mortal sins that I can just sit there and lay out hour after hour after hour. Explain your movement. Explain where the fuck you were during the, you know, where were you when the lights went out, Mr. Sullivan? But now they're creating an entire generation of young guns who come roll right off the factory floor with this stuff already burned on their motherboards. They just assume that everything, that whatever happened before 2006 is not discussable anymore. Let's just move forward. So, for example, Mr. Frum brings up a Clifton Yin, who was, according to his bio, the youngest Asian American delegate to the last Republican convention. So, you know, you screw them up as kids and they become conservatives for life.
Yeah.
But his critique is that George W. Bush's place in the pantheon of celebrated American presidents is far from secure. Nevertheless, the collapse of Muammar Gaddafi's regime in Libya sheds new light on President Bush's vigorous support for democratic values across the entire Middle East.
Wait a minute.
An Obama administration starred for good news will likely seek and receive credit for helping topple the dictatorship. But his predecessor deserves substantial credit for envisioning and perhaps even helping instigate the Arab Spring, of which the events in Libya constitute only the latest chapter at the whole.
Sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you with laughing. This is like the last time I saw John McCain on a Sunday show. I just burst out laughing because at this point it's just such a joke. Anyone saying that these foreign policy successes that are going on have to have everything to do with George W. Bush. Let's make sure we give kudos to John Bolton, too, while we're at it. It just makes my sides hurt.
I'll give Mr. Frum credit. He actually lets people comment on his site. You know, Andrew Sullivan is frankly too big of a coward to do that.
Yeah.
He doesn't let people comment at his site because they would eviscerate him. But, you know, after a whole bunch of comments that were just hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, what the hell are you what are you smoking? Are you four? Or did you just fall out of your mother's womb? What's your problem?
Yeah.
Mr. Clifton Yin, to his credit, came back and this was in the comment section said, "To be clear, I am not a fan of the Bush presidency as a whole. The invasion of Iraq was clearly terribly mismanaged." Lie number two.
It was the
management of Iraq that was the problem. "Nevertheless, given his failures, both foreign and domestic, I think it's become all too easy to vilify his administration," and so forth. And this is someone who's given a platform on a very prestigious conservative forum. And you see these people all over the place. And there's some other gentleman who's, you know, three posts earlier is making some whiny complaint that he – you know, who's speaking for me? I've been unemployed for a year. You know, who's taking my place? And you flip it open. And it's me and my girlfriend got married and we went to Paris and we took 25 days for our honeymoon. And we of course, had all these really, really expensive plans that we had to do first. And then we got back and I started looking for a job and now I'm upset. I'm like, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yep.
And in this guy's case, I'm a little more sympathetic because he's just young and stupid. And it's a sin I was guilty of, and I'm sure he'll grow out of it. But there's so – I see this in – and this is, again, this everybody wants to grow up to be Ross Douhat.
His name is,
which is, you know, a terrible writer, crappy analyst, or Mark Halperin. Terrible writer, crappy analyst, clear conservative bias, completely fact-resistant, and has a job for life.
Yep.
And once you start seeing this trend everywhere – you start seeing it in print, on the radio, on television, and noticing that these people are flowing through what is clearly an old conservative boys' network.
This is
the upscale version of Wingnut welfare.
Absolutely.
But that's the problem we liberals have, is these guys have a plan. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to sort of bankroll generation after generation of people who continue the legacy and continue telling the same lies, continue advancing the agenda, and continue pushing it forward. Even when they have a schism, they still drop back to the, well, yeah, George Bush was bad, but conservatism is awesome. And they just keep right on rolling.
And it's just
And somebody keeps giving them jobs. And somebody keeps hiring them. And somebody, no matter
there's a real funding mechanism there forever. Yeah. And
so that's what loops me back to Morning Joe.
Yeah.
Some person at MSNBC sat down with, you know, a spreadsheet and said, putting all of these awful Beltway insiders who traffic in the worst kind of trash and lies and innuendo and conservative bullshit on my liberal station for 3 hours every morning pays dividends, pays the bills.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I still monitor the media. Clearly, I keep an eye on what's happening out there, as I think every good citizen should. But I'm done with the media.
Yeah, well, and done with our blood pressure can't take more than you. I mean, mine can't, and I don't think there's any reason. I keep saying to myself when I do catch that show is, who do they think their audience is?
Yeah,
that's, you know, that they can talk about them this way, and they just do. And this is they obviously, one of the purposes of Morning Joe is to outrage the blogs so that they get additional, you know, residual traffic from. You can you believe what's happened on Morning Joe this morning? And all of a sudden there's this chatter from us, from people like us, you know.
Well, and
oh my God.
part of their audience is also, you know, centrist know-nothings who want to flip on the television for 5 minutes, get their bias that those damn liberals, it's both sides do it, and those damn liberals and their damn agenda, they've gone over the top this time.
There's also a circle jerk going on, as you say, between the Republicans on the Hill and Morning Joe and Drudge and the Washington Times and Fox, circling around so that there's this conversation going on so that by the time it gets from Rick Perry's mouth to, you know, to through Drudge to Fox to whatever, it's gospel. It's out there. As Cokie Roberts says, it's just out there. So we have to report it because it's out there. Because it's been on four sources. You know, the lie has been on four sources. Drudge, Washington Times, Fox, and me. See?
We have been laying siege to that castle for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, what they're doing is not very secret. They're lying. Mm-hmm. And there are whole industries built around debunking the lies of Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
There are whole industries built around, it's literally Media Matters.
Yeah.
Al Franken's books are, a lot of them are simply deconstructing the biggest and littlest and all the lies in between on one particular topic or another. And they're so transparent.
Yeah.
And you can sit in a conservative's chest and show them this, and they will not believe you.
Yeah.
They will simply, their brains are no longer anything but fucking mush.
They're not so reacting to facts at all and don't care.
And they haven't for a really frighteningly long time, which is why Rick Perry is there, you know, is up by double digits.
In the lead.
We've been outside this castle laying siege to it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We keep throwing facts at it and logic at it and elegant, if you don't mind me saying, prose at it and outrage at it and shrill at it. And they're not budging.
Yeah.
So we are stuck in trench warfare at this point.
Uh-huh.
And that's what really scares me because
we've
really given it our best effort. We've really tried every reasonable thing I can think of. And you can see it, I think, in the faces and voices of people like Rachel Maddow who just roll their eyes and go, I can't fucking believe.
Yep.
But the thing is, I now can believe. I believe we are two different countries headed inexorably towards either a soft, cold war or a hard, hot war. But
or a continuation of the trench where the other side gradually dies off, which seems to be their audience is so white and so
But as long as they
old.
Can hold as long as they can hold the government hostage.
Yep.
And as as long as the people on our side keep trying to fucking compromise with them.
Yes. Yes.
Keep thinking that if we just give the crazy, wild, mad, rabid dog another
one more chance, yeah.
Then they'll stop being crazy. That's the problem. And standing outside of that entire nexus, watching it work like a you know transparent machine, you can see all the moving parts. That's the thing that's so crazy about it.
Yeah.
There's no mystery to how this is working.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Two things I wanted to sum up with, just in terms of giving our audience a sense of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
One is this wonderful article. I'm finally catching up with my New Yorker magazine reading. And there was a wonderful article that I recommend everybody read if you have access to it. And you have to be a subscriber or buy the issue to get it online. But it's by Calvin Trillin.
Yay!
And Calvin Trillin is commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Freedom Rides that he covered as Time Magazine's Atlanta correspondent in 1962, 63, somewhere in there. And I really want you, Driftglass, to read this article because...
Well, because I love Calvin Trillin.
Right. Well, but also the picture that he paints of journalism at that time, mm-hmm. where he would file a story... And it would go to an editor in New York who would clean it up and then go to the magazine's editor who had the benefit of not seeing Calvin's notes.
Uh-huh.
And there's this whole sense of, you know, Time Magazine is a wonderful magazine for everyone except those who write for it.
<You know>? Exactly.
Because it's so boiled down that this can't possibly be what I worked on all week, you know. But... So, and the pictures of what it was like to be on the ground as a reporter in those days. He turns a wonderful phrase and he tells a wonderful story and paints a great picture of what this was like. Mm-hmm. But one of the sentences that just jumped out and bit me in this article is that at the time, only 1 out of 4 Americans supported the Freedom Riders. Across the country, 1 out of 4. And so we're the 1 out of 4. And I'm sorry, but we're always going to be that. And we will push incrementally toward progress. And, you know, 30 years later, everyone thinks what you did is a great thing.
Now,
50
years later. A, I agree. B, we're not fighting for new things, Lugal. We're fighting to hang on to old things. It's not like we're saying, here's this new branch of human rights that you should embrace because it's fucking embarrassing and counter to everything in your democratic ideals, that you're denying voting rights to this entire group of people who you once owned as property.
Well, but they're just trying to take it back to that era. That's
exactly.
All. Yeah.
And that's my point. It's you know, you start off with 1/4 people believing, and I'm assuming there's a naive 50% in the middle there who just had no idea what was going on or didn't mm-hmm. believe it or didn't believe it's that bad or whatever. Or that's a Southern issue or a states' rights issue. And that's fine.
I also think there was an issue with, a large number of the Freedom Riders that were white were Jewish.
Yeah.
And so, it's the N-word and then it's N-loving Jews. and that's a lot of what was going on. It was just, let's make our prejudice really broad here, you know.
And it was all very clear and, not to coin a phrase, black and white.
Yeah.
No, the evil people were on this side, and the good people were on that side. And a vast and disinterested public had to be engaged and horrified at what the bad guys were doing. And a bunch of National Guards had to go down and kick some ass, and so on and so forth. And 50 years later, we look back and go, how could they have been so stupid?
But isn't it interesting that it was the Republican president who sent the National Guard?
Oh, yeah. If he were running now, I'd vote for him.
Yeah.
If it were Dwight Eisenhower versus Barack Obama, Dwight Eisenhower would get my vote.
Yeah, at this
Hands
point.
Hands down. No, no questions asked. But this, I feel like, you know, this is maybe it's the end of the space shuttle talking, but we're supposed to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And what we're doing is hanging on to what we already have by our fingernails and being driven back. And Rick Perry wants to repeal the fucking 20th century.
Yep.
You know? And so it's not like we're fighting for some, again, a new set of injustices that are just fresh off, you know, the bus. We're fighting to convince people that the New Deal is a good idea.
Well, and we've been brainwashed. The whole country has been brainwashed since Reagan and before. That government's evil, government's bad, government right. can't do anything right. Mm-hmm. And then those people that are dependent on government grows more and more every day. I don't know if you saw the article today that one of the ways that a lot of near-retirement workers are coping with the fact that they can't be employed anymore is applying for disability. And the SSI and the Social Security disability areas are getting really taxed to the point of breakage. Mm-hmm. Who do you go to get on disability? I've said this before. You go to your Republican congressman to help you get on disability. And it's $500 a month or less, but hey, that can be half a mortgage payment. You know, that's keeping people alive, and they're never going to, you know, 57 to 62-year-olds who are never going to work again, you know, have nothing else to turn to. And they're going to the government. And they're in Kentucky. And they're in the Tea Party. And I'm losing my mind at this point.
There was a certain, you know, a very, very unambiguous moral clarity about the people on the two sides of the issue. The issues in the civil rights movement, and I'm not going to make light of it. I'm not going to pretend that it was unsubtle or uncomplicated or not physically dangerous. But the lines were very clearly drawn.
But I think the lines are still as equally clearly drawn if you're a 23-year-old college student.
Sure.
The Tea Party is ugly, and people are seeing that.
But here's the difference. In the civil rights movement, leaders like Martin Luther King appropriated the language of democracy, appropriated the very language of the Constitution, and essentially said – well, it said exactly – you know, this is the check you didn't cash.
Right.
We're simply here to redeem the rights that your own goddamn document guarantees us.
Yep.
We're not here to ask for anything new or special or weird. This is the promise you made.
Well, they had the Cold War to help them too.
Exactly. They could turn to the Soviets and said, really, do you want to look bad to these people?
Do you want to look bad to Africa? Do you want to look bad to Africa? When the Soviet Union comes in and says, you're all equal in our eyes.
Right.
And we're going to grant you every right that we give everyone in Moscow. You're going to have the same rights. And look at what they're doing in Georgia, you know?
Exactly. And do you want to be a propaganda weapon for the commies?
Right, right.
But, you know, the Kochs and their allies are smart and patient, and they have a very long vision, which is
– and a big wallet.
Just – convince an entire generation of people that what other nations think of you is not important.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You don't care. I don't care what those damn French
people – I'm American. Yeah.
And so get people to not give a shit about what the rest of the world thinks of them. Get people to think that other people that don't look like them aren't really human. Yeah. Get people to believe that democratic government is evil.
But Driftglass, they lost in North Carolina. When they tried to do local schools and neighborhood schools, and they tried to resegregate and go back to Jim Crow, who came out in the streets? And they went out in the streets and they risked arrest was the students.
And they won. I'm hopeful. Well, the message I'm trying to get across is the game has changed.
Okay. They've got their own media. You know, that's a big difference.
That's the point. The game has changed in that we're fighting using the same vocabulary and the same tactics in our minds as the "we shall overcome." Let's get them in the streets, man. Let's mass, and we don't get that they don't listen to us anymore. Mm-hmm. That you can have a billion people turn out, and the TV cameras will just turn away, and it will be as if it never happened.
And I want to end this on a lighter note than this because I'm getting bummed.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, we're still on the right side of history. We just have to get smarter about – figure out the war we're fighting. We're fighting the old war.
Yeah,
we need to figure out that – no, we need to fight this new battle. And there are lots of successes, and the ones that you've articulated are clear. And there are great successes and great reasons for hope every day. But we have to get over this idea that we can still fight on horse cavalry against people who have, you know, jet fighters and warships. We should be smarter than that because we are smarter than that.
And how do we do that? What are the weapons you're talking about that we should be using?
You and me, baby.
Well, okay.
You and me. I don't believe in the media anymore. Look at Morning Joe. Look at the way the worst people in America, the worst, most imperial, jaded, corrupted, untrustworthy, lying people in America have their own talk shows, have their own television shows, write for major newspapers and never get fired, no matter how badly they fuck up.
Well, like, and the media, I mean, Jon Stewart called the media the dog in the movie Up, the squirrel.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, here's Michelle Bachmann winning and being on every talk show, and by Monday afternoon, it's Rick Perry, shiny thing, new. And it's ratings and money and not giving a shit about the country that we live in or the truth. Not caring about the truth is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And the media in general does not care about the truth. They really don't.
And you know who does? Jon Stewart.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of liberal bloggers I know.
Did you see Jon Stewart actually did call out Ed Schultz the other day in favor of Rick Perry because Ed Schultz Rick Perry said something about this black cloud is hanging over us. It's called the debt.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed Schultz cast an aspersion and said, "You see," he said, "black cloud." He's talking about Barack Obama. And
yeah.
And Jon Stewart said, "No, I think if you had played the whole clip there, Ed, you'd realize he was talking about the dead." And then they went on and on and on, talked about Washington is a black hole where Rick Perry said Washington is a black hole where ideas go to die. And once again, one of the Daily Show guys came on and said, "See, he's going. This is just so racist. It's just like in The Help." Oh, it was so funny. It was just so funny. I wanted to share one other story. I know I haven't shared this with you, but it made me laugh my guts out. And I shouldn't laugh my guts out at the dentist, but I was at the dentist this week. And it's one of these modern dentist's offices where each chair has its own little individual TV with Dish Network on the TV, which is just ridiculous, okay? It's ridiculous that they have this. But they had on some show, and I asked for the remote. I said, "I don't want to watch whatever this is. You know, can I watch something else?" And she said, "Oh, sure, it's your individual chair. This is your experience. You know, I'm getting fillings, for crying out loud." So I changed the channel about five times, and I come up on Democracy Now. You know, and it's Amy Goodman, and then it's all this liberal stuff. I'm like, "I'm putting this on. I'm turning it up." For the dental hygienist, he'll get a mouthful of Amy Goodman and the Tom Hartman was on right up. "Tom Hartman, yeah. Turn it up. Turn it goddamn up," right? I turn it up and I'm listening to it, and they start to mention the passing of Jack Layton. And for those of you who don't know, the late Jack Layton was a prominent liberal in Canada who I believe had cancer and died very quickly. And I'm not laughing about that because that's very sad. They said something about Jack Layton, and then they had this statement about optimism and changing the world that Jack Layton had said. And actually, I think on Twitter tonight, I saw Jack Layton is lying in state in Ottawa tonight. And then they said Jack Layton dead at such and such an age. And I heard this hygienist from across the room say, "Jack LaLanne died?" And I yelled out, "No, Jack Layton, he's some Canadian member of parliament." And as I'm saying that, another hygienist pipes in and says, "Oh, good, I'm glad it's not Jack LaLanne, because Susan would have to take the rest of the day off." So yeah. I just thought, you know, and these are voters.
Yep.
In southern Illinois. You know, this isn't Arkansas. what's the place you like to beat up?
You mean Sister Fuck Arkansas?
That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the joke if you'd like me to tell you the joke.
All right.
Why are hillbilly murders never solved?
Oh, yes. And the answer is
because all the DNA is the same.
That's a very good joke.
Yeah, it's a good one.
We want to thank our listeners, and we're so glad you're here with us. We've gotten some regular snail mail from listeners, long letters that we love, and nice cards, and oh my goodness, the mailbox today was a joy to open. We have a letter from Gary, And his wife also signed the letter, and thank you very much. They are in Michigan. And they say, dear Bluegal and Driftglass, they put it that way. Dear Bluegal and Driftglass, we've been meaning to contribute for a while, but I am a shameless procrastinator. Here's our small contribution to keep your podcast going, and please keep it going. My wife and I listen to the podcasts posted on Crooks and Liars every Sunday morning after reading the paper. In these depressing times, it is nice to know that there are reasonable, rational, like-minded individuals that still out there. Well, after this podcast, I'm not sure you're going to think that anymore. Even when there's not much good news, it helps to know we're not alone. Thanks for what you do, and keep it up. P.S., one small favor. You are both passionate individuals, but please don't step on each other's words. We want to hear from you both.
Okay.
This is an edited podcast. I try to cut out wherever we talk over each other, but sometimes that's kind of hard.
And we record this like four different times from different
sometimes.
Angles. And
sometimes we do, yeah. It depends on how the recording turns out, but, you know, I'll come back and say, look, we need to do this with a little more coffee next time. Thank you, Gary, and thank you, Mrs. Gary, for writing. We're just so glad to have you on board, and thanks for your kind words. Thanks, everybody, for writing. And you can write us. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. We also have a P.O. box, and the P.O. box address is on our website, which is professionalleft.blogspot.com. And there you can listen to us for free with no download and no registration. You can listen to all of our archives. And we are on episode 90, by the way, Driftglass.
Woohoo!
That's
90.
Really pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
We are on Facebook. Our podcast is posted at our Facebook page every week. And again, there's a link to our Facebook page at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. If you would like us on Facebook, you can also friend me. I'm Frances Langham on Facebook, and I'll be glad to friend you back. We're on iTunes, and we love our iTunes listeners, and we also love our Crooks and Liars listeners that Gary and his wife listen on Crooks and Liars, that wonderful blog where we are posted every Saturday night at Open Thread. If you would like our podcast to continue, we would like a $5 contribution. It's not blackmail. It's just kind of a quid pro quo over here.
See, you had to throw the race car down.
I had to go dark. We would love it if you would pitch $5 or more in the hat. You can do that, again, at our website at professionalleft.blogspot.com or send a check to the Professional Left via our post office box. Again, feel free to write us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Be aware, if you do write us at that address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you tell us otherwise.
So, Lugal, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
The Internet Kitties want their litter box back. That advanced copy of Dick Cheney's memoir is not absorbent.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2011, Driftglass Bluegal Podcast.
Sorry. Damn you, Barack Obama.
Yeah, I blame Barack Obama.
I blame Jorge Luis Borges.
See, now there's that, too. He didn't like his Google Doodle.
He dumped a big assload of magic realism on their asses. Here.